Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Local news can come at you fast. Want the latest on what's happening in your backyard? Download the free Odyssey app. Follow your local news station, and you'll get alerts on the top stories making headlines in your city. You can stay in the know, no matter what you're up to, and be among the first to find out when news breaks. Plus, keep tabs on weather and traffic, so you're never caught off guard. To get started, download the Odyssey app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y. And follow your local news station.
Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to Face Connecticut. I'm Morgan Cunningham on WTIC News Talk 1080, Light 100.5 WRCH, and 96.5 TIC. This morning on Face Connecticut, Eastern Connecticut State University history professor Tom Belsersky is going to join us to talk about the life and legacy of former President Jimmy Carter, who passed away at the age of 100 on December 29th, 2024. He was born October 1st, 1924. The oldest living president in American history, was the 39th president, and had a tumultuous term in office that spanned from 1977 to 1981. Former President Carter was not a stranger to Connecticut. A naval man himself, he deeply supported the submarine operations and history that Connecticut has. He campaigned here. Connecticut used to be more in play, and even helped former Governor El Grosso campaign in the state in 1978. Before we bring on Professor Belsersky, I do want to play an excerpt of an interview that Jimmy Carter did as a candidate on WTIC May 10th, 1976.
Now back to Dick Bertel.
Well, thank you very much, Bill, and it's 12 minutes after 1 o'clock, and I do believe that Governor Jimmy Carter is on the live line with us right now. Good afternoon, Governor. How are you?
Just fine, thank you.
That's nice. What's the weather like in Georgia? I'm curious.
Well, it's beautiful as always, about like air conditioning, I guess. Johnny.
Are you relaxing today prior to the primaries tomorrow?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm writing a major speech to be made on atomic power, atomic energy, atomic weapons, and nuclear waste disposal to be made at the United Nations this week. And so I'm putting the final touches on that speech.
I see. Well, we've had Morris Udall on the program earlier today, and as you probably know, Senator Jackson was blitzing Connecticut for 3 days, the past 3 days, and yet Governor Grasso has conceded that you are the leader here in Connecticut. When I talked to you 2 weeks ago, you indicated that you would win in Connecticut. Do you have any idea by what plurality, by what percentage?
Well, of course, we don't take anything for granted. We've had several trips to Connecticut. We've got a fairly good organization. We're advertising there. As you know, I was up there recently myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't ever predict victories or the size of victories. I think we do have a difficulty there with Governor Grasso being so deeply involved in Senator Jackson's campaign. This has not happened in many other states, as you know, and Senator Jackson has had very little success in recent weeks, but I'm sure that that will make a difference in Connecticut, so we're not taking anything for granted.
Former President Jimmy Carter, then a candidate in May of 1976, appearing on WTIC. Not the only time he came on our station, but I thought that was an interesting moment in time to share with everybody. Again, Professor Thomas Belsersky, a history professor at Eastern Connecticut State University, is our guest. Professor, I'd like to just start with a general overview of who Jimmy Carter was as a person, his upbringing, his earliest formative years, long before he was president. What could you tell us?
Well, Jimmy Carter is our only president from the state of Georgia, and he is a proud native son of the South. He was born and raised famously in Plains, Georgia, where he now resides. And his kind of early years reflect someone who benefited from the major events of the period. He was born in 1924, and so he was thus eligible, or at least interested, I think, in military service during World War II. He actually ended up, though, going to the United States Naval Academy, and therefore was in the service after the war. And as a Navy man, he actually was active in submarines and took an interest in his lifetime, therefore, in nuclear energy and the technical side, the engineering side of our energy systems. But he had quickly became sort of, in a way, the fulfillment of his destiny. His father died relatively young, so he returned home to Plains, where he became a peanut farmer. And I really think that's, in a way, that the origin of his political rise.
If we look at the 1970s, the political climate was kind of tumultuous, right? You had the Nixon years. You also had Gerald Ford in the mid-70s. And then all of a sudden, a favorability that got Jimmy Carter elected. So what was going on politically that led people to bring in a Washington outsider?
And it's true. Jimmy Carter campaigned as an outsider and, in a way, governed as an outsider and ultimately, I think, failed to take a second term for that leadership style, which I'm sure we'll get into. But I think it's important to talk a little bit about his pre-presidential political career and how it then led him to be that outsider candidate who the American people could turn to and trust. He was a Southerner. I reiterate that because it's such a core aspect of his identity. Now, he wasn't the first Southern president since the Civil War, by no means. He wasn't even the first Southern president since World War II. That title falls to Lyndon Johnson. But if you think about sort of the issues of the 1960s and the 1970s, one of the biggest ones, if not the largest one in the American conscience, would be civil rights and the growing opposition and ultimately the movement that defined that period. And as governor of Georgia, eventually the kind of most important elected office he takes before his presidential run, he was really coming in at sort of the end of the formal civil rights movement, but still in a moment where the work being done was ultimately about the practical end of segregation and really building a newly integrated society in which black and white people in the South had equal opportunities and rights. And so Carter was one of the first politicians to truly build a biracial coalition in his political movement. And Georgia was the home to Martin Luther King Jr. After his assassination, his father, known as Daddy King, ends up being one of Carter's biggest supporters. Carter does it first, in a way, in his ability to first become governor of Georgia and then ultimately to try to make what looked like at the time a dark horse run for office in 1976. And to do it, and the mechanics are actually somewhat similar to today. In the 1970s, the very first test, you might say, of any presidential candidate's ability to win would be to win the Iowa caucuses. And Carter puts all his energy into performing there, and he does, in fact, win both the Iowa caucus and then that first primary, the New Hampshire primary, which still is the 1-2 punch of presidential primary season. And so now we're into early 1976, and Jimmy Carter, this unknown, really, who would hand out buttons saying, "My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president," was starting to gain traction.
You've gone in 1976. a very fresh memory of the Vietnam War, right? When Carter, 1977, when his administration began, not that long after, and he pardoned Vietnam draft invaders. What was his relationship in those few immediate years following the end of the U.S. being over in Vietnam?
It's interesting in that Carter doesn't necessarily have to run a campaign so much about the Vietnam War as it is about the legacy of leadership of the prior 20 years. And he didn't really have to make a war policy or have to suggest any kind of tactical change because technically, and it is true, the war had ended by 1976. All troops had been withdrawn. That actually happened during the Ford administration. And so I think in some ways, the less said about it, the better, I would say, within the 1976 campaign. There were aspects of foreign policy, certainly, that came up in the 76 campaign, but it's particularly about peace treaties over nuclear weapons, nuclear arms reductions with the Soviet Union would be one of the big ones, ultimately what America's defense budget should be. And that's just sort of a hint at some of the debates that would take place. But really more it's about leadership. It's about trust. It's about restoring faith in government. And so this outsider status that he brought allowed him to say, essentially, to the American people, it's time for a change. It's time for someone you can trust. And as he says, why not the best? And Carter will use domestic policy as kind of his major campaign issue. And in his early part of his presidency, it's mostly what he focuses on. Ironically, of course, his presidency itself will end up being defined and I think ended by foreign policy difficulties in the Middle East.
One connection that I see between now and 50 years ago during the Carter administration is the focus and the talk on energy, because he was big on talking about futuristic goals regarding energy, and in modern American history, the first president to really focus on that as a major American issue. Could you talk about what his big picture goals were with, say, energy?
Energy has defined multiple presidencies. And I think in the long term, we're going to look back on energy policy and the American sort of reliance upon fossil fuels and particularly automobiles as one of the most consequential decisions of the 20th century that will continue to resonate the 21st. So in the 1970s, we're not really debating so much infrastructure and whether we should, say, for example, invest in mass transit to a greater degree or some of the things that might be or surrounding today's policies, so much as just the very beginning of consciousness around energy conservation and the use of renewable energy. At the time, the major one that was coming of age was solar power. So Carter led in a way and lived and walked the walk of energy conservation. He famously turned the heat down in the White House, which is a building that staffs hundreds of people, and encouraged people who were cold to wear sweaters, as he often did in one of his signature looks. But that was just, in a way, symbolic or political theater, because in the background, he was reorganizing the Department of Energy, or really organizing it for the first time, I should say, which was made it into a new cabinet position, which again elevates any issue or profile to much higher standing. He was very proud that Congress at the time did pass a comprehensive energy bill that he signed, which he believed, again, was going to both lead to conservation and the promote the growth of renewables. But this is all sort of early stuff. I mean, he put solar panels in the White House famously as well. It's all early stuff, if you think about it. And he didn't actually know at the time of his initial inauguration that, in fact, the greatest energy challenge would be what we call still the oil shocks, whereby the supply of crude oil from the Middle East, which was and still is our major supplier of that source, was reduced drastically and soared in price in terms of what it cost. And so when it's eventually refined as gasoline at the pump, we see Americans once again having to ration and having to pay a much higher price, which although by today's standards will seem low, for a gallon of gasoline. So this is sort of a problem that's outside of his control, and it hit a couple of times during the 1970s as well in the 1980s. And we, in a way, had an oil shock most recently, so I think you're right to make that comparison with gasoline soaring above $5 for the first time on the national average. But actually, when you look at it from kind of cost of the dollar, we're looking at the historical sort of value of the dollar in the 1970s, comparatively, gasoline was cost more to the average American. And so that's really important to point out that this was a major hit to the economy in a way. And this is all really in 1979. And it lays the groundwork again for the kind of criticisms that will emerge from the Republican side of the aisle and then ultimately in the challenge brought by Ronald Reagan.
On Face Connecticut this morning, I'm Morgan Cunningham with my guest, Eastern Connecticut State University history professor Thomas Balcerski. As we continue our conversation remembering the life and legacy of America's 39th President Jimmy Carter, who recently died at the age of 100, the oldest living president in American history, I do want to draw attention to a number of challenges that Carter did have during his 4 years in office. We just kind of talked about the economy and gas prices. I do want to talk about the Iran hostage crisis. However, I also want to draw on the fact that he had a difficult time dealing with Congress.
I think it comes back to just the outsiderness, his leadership style, his sort of refusal to conform to the traditional rules of Washington and how the place worked. And he never really changed. He remained himself. And so that's the first thing. He didn't really believe in political favors. He kind of didn't play the game, you might say. And in fact, in the very first year of office, he stated in a press conference that he thought it was inevitable, to use his word, that he would eventually come into conflict with Congress. He just sort of understood himself as being unable, in a way, to do the kind of political work that has led to legislative success for the metric of the first 100 days and beyond. One of the people who became one of his greatest critics within his own party from the liberal wing of the Democratic Party was Ted Kennedy. And before we even get to who challenged Carter for the 1980 nomination, or rather I should say election, let's talk about the 1980 Democratic nomination. Ultimately, Kennedy would run as a primary challenger against Carter in 1980, and while not successful, weakened Carter's standing within the party and certainly within his sort of political standing in the nation. But again, back to Congress, he was working with the longtime Speaker of the House, Tip O'Neill. The Democrats, of course, controlled the House for the entirety of Carter's time and, frankly, for the 40 years. So that wasn't the question. It was just, would he be able to work with his own party? You know, it was difficult for him because some of his legislation was further than the Democratic Congress would go. And as we're seeing today, presidents don't always have alignment with their caucus, and that can lead to some unexpected results. The gas rationing plan, which we were just talking about, was unpopular with members of his own party, and Democrats, in fact, aligned in this case with Republicans to criticize this plan. It goes to show that sometimes he was leading a little bit further than his own party wanted him to be. In 1980, what Reagan is able to do is essentially take Carter to task for almost every policy decision he made for the events in 1980, particularly the hostage crisis that emerged in Iran. And to basically criticize his leadership style, his efficacy, his weakness, and both in terms of the kind of campaign Reagan ran and in, particularly in the debates, he was able to dismiss Carter in these classic one-liners, which we still quote today, that in a way minimized what challenges Carter faced, and in a way, also from looking ahead, what happens in Reagan's presidency points to the kind of leader he would be, someone who would be eternally optimistic and would often be just unwilling to face the kinds of realities, I think, with the same realism that Carter brought. And so Carter's downfall, I think, is he's too much of a realist. He's too much of someone, a realist in the sense that he's not willing to project optimism, but an idealist in that his policies weren't always in alignment with current thinking. He was ahead of his time in that way.
Looking back, pushing 50 years, how does former President Jimmy Carter rank to this day?
Yeah. Well, rankings are a tricky thing. I participated in the C-SPAN rankings, and I really enjoyed the experience. And I thought it gave me a chance to look back on all the presidents, because in order to rank any one president, frankly, you need to rank them all. And Carter's ranking at the 2020 round was 26th, and that puts him a little bit below the middle of the pack, since there were 44 rankings in 2020. He had fallen a little bit from his initial debut, but had gone up one spot from 2017. So he's been in that middle part. If we were to try to make a letter grade out of it, we might say it's in the C range. And where he's done sort of well within these categories that are arbitrary but nevertheless helpful is generally under this category of moral authority and pursued equal justice for all. He's ranked very highly. I think one way to say it is he's something of a liberal darling. There's a halo or a glow around him that I think has emerged from his post-presidential behavior, activities, and longevity, frankly. Not every president since Jimmy Carter, every Democratic candidate, I should say, and president, has embraced Carter and Carter's sort of persona. But it's interesting that Joe Biden, in one of his very first moves as president, visited the Carters in Plains and took a photo, which circulated widely. And that was interesting, because that's not something that every president has done. And it just signals, I think, first of all, Biden's actual relationship with Carter. Biden was in Congress when Carter was president. But also, like, that there is something about how we look at this sort of now very senior elderly man and almost nostalgically look back on a time when our leaders were trustworthy, could be taken at their word, and we felt had the best interests of the American people at heart.
Professor Balcerski, history professor at Eastern Connecticut State University. Now that he's passed, he's been out of office for many years to this point anyway. How are people going to look back on him, his life, his presidency? How's he going to be written about in the history books?
So Carter will be remembered for his post-presidency. Ultimately, it's the longest in American history. He's the oldest president at this point. And he just continues to be a relic of a time and place that by any standard today was simpler, more honest, and I would think kinder. He was a man who in his presidency promoted music and the arts, who promoted sin and reconciliation around the globe, and who did his best to address the challenges of the 1970s at home. He'll be remembered for so many things, and it really, it's hard to say anyone, but he's one of our few presidents who's won a Nobel Prize. He's one of the presidents whose humanitarian is just probably greater around the globe than even at home, and that's a rare thing. He's perhaps the most down-to-earth, modest man to ever hold the presidency, or at least in modern times. As a volunteer for Habitat for Humanity, he built houses well into his 90s. He's one of us in a lot of ways, and his legacy will be to remind people that truly anyone can become president.
Dr. Balcerski, thank you for your insight. I really appreciate your coming on Face Connecticut this morning.
All right. Well, it's a pleasure speaking with you, Morgan.
Again, we really appreciate your time, Professor. I'm Morgan Cunningham, wrapping up Face Connecticut as we look back on life and legacy of former President Jimmy Carter, America's 39th president, who lived to be 100 years old, the oldest former president to ever live in American history, a life spanning from October 1st, 1924 to December 29th, 2024.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.